Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. I warned you in the last episode, I got another question for you.
Oh,
now,
no.
This one is like a whole page. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Okay.
But it was from Anton. Okay. And I know he's been a longtime listener. We've gotten a number of questions from him over the time. So we should give him a gold star or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep, thanks for staying engaged with
a
us.
A frequent questioner. We like those.
I like those. And this one's interesting. He said, you know, I recently joined a project and I've been advocating to do HALT. And the likely, you know, during the design verifications, reduce the likelihood of being surprised later in the program. I think that's a really solid rationale for doing HALT.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but they have been over time of this program, they've been doing growth tests and they have found some design risks in some areas that they're already addressing.
I'm sorry, what kind of test?
So growth testing. So I don't know what kind of product growth. So they take systems
growth
and run
testing,
them through
growth.
It and look at how often it fails and fix those and then go run it again and go fix those. But it's usually growth testing.
Is it Duane Reliability?
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. But there's lots of methods for doing it. But it's usually at operating conditions, right?
Yeah.
Think of it as a tank getting run around on a track or a car on a test track.
All right.
Right. And they're saying, oh, we found stuff. And so one of the design engineers was saying, what's the ROI of doing HALT at this stage? We're already found stuff and we're already working on it. Now, he goes on. And it sounds like it might be a medical product. It talks about patient or user safety must be addressed, no matter where you find it. And what Anton's concern is that we're not finding all of those types of failure modes that could be harmful to the patient or the user. And that using it just at normal conditions isn't giving us enough stress to figure out what else could be failing. And so he's saying that the return on investment is that we will increase our chance of identifying serious failures or serious faults before we end up locking down the design and it gets way too expensive. And then he goes on that we're getting the typical pushback. He's really mentioning two types of pushback. One, we're already finding stuff and fixing them. And second one is we're going way beyond operating conditions. Why would that be relevant? And so he's getting the two classic, I think, pushbacks from his team.
Yeah.
And so then he wraps up, he goes, from his perspective, from Anton's perspective, in each of these cases, HALT still provides value. It helps us understand the design robustness, assess safety margins, make informed decisions about where to focus future improvements, and it can also serve as a confidence-building tool, especially when transitioning to design verification, because then you could use it to confirm what you already know about and that you fixed it versus discovering it later in the program.
Right, and usually you've gone well beyond the design
validation
test. When you do HALT, you should know that it's not going to be an issue. It's going to be a non-event because you've done it several times. But this kind of question sounds like one of my clients, you know, basically the product might be, who knows. Anyway, that the product was already had been in the field. Labs were testing parts mechanically, continuously, and had been. They still had some issues in the field, which they knew about, and I had been informed of and talked to. And a lot of them were the fact that in development, this is why it's so difficult to do after the fact and after the product's been produced, is in development and using HALT, you're going to use it on the subsystems first, power supplies separately. If you can take a electronic card cage out and put it in a chamber separately next to the mechanics, But things like pneumatic tubes and polyflow tubes with liquid in them are going to be severely restricting in environmental in thermal tests. Okay, because well, of yeah, the, I mean, right, tend to they're going to be a very low limit on how quickly they become stiff and can't be closed or open, or valves can't be closed or open because
No. But well, if your main point of, let's say I got to look at a one of these soda dispenser systems where it, you know, gases up liquid with a bunch of carbon dioxide, I think, or I don't know what it makes bubbles, and it's under pressure and all these
things. Oh, yeah. It's a carbonation machine.
Carbonation process. Yeah. And
okay.
And their concern was, you know, how do we evaluate our tubing systems and pressures? Well, use the Holt principle, you know, go really low and go really high and take different temperatures in and around that and stuff, and then have a mop nearby, because when they break, you're going to have a mess. And they kind of frowned at me a little bit, but they said, yeah, we got to do that. We got to know where the limits are of these things. And one of their pumps was a roller that squeezed the tube.
Right.
And they were worried, how long will that last? Said, well, a quick way to find out is change your pressures and change your temperatures and see if it, there's always going to be the fatigue damage over time. But what else could go wrong? Are you going to blow out a valve over here when this is constrained and you're at a particular pressure? You can do that today in the lab. Just go do it. So they got talked into it to see if they could make that happen.
Well, I'm always suspicious when there's a change in material properties because of that. I mean, if you, like we talked about in a previous podcast, if you change you reach a temperature of reflow for solder, you've really, that's an irrelevant failure.
That's and right.
If you crack a tube, a polymer.
Because it was frozen. It's a different material now. Different material properties.
And you're changing, or if you're cycling a valve and the sealing surface climbs in temperature well beyond, you know, anything, it's going to change the property of that of the sealing surface of the polymer probably, and you're not going to get a linear response in time of so you've got to be very cautious about those kinds of things.
Oh yeah.
So that's the same with any test.
You got to think it through. There's not a fixed system.
And you got to do it before the products, early in the stages where you can separately
test at the various subsystems and stuff.
Because mechanics and circuit boards.
You know, you're exactly right. It's the process of designing the Holt, and we've talked about this lots of times, is that and earlier and often, you mentioned, you know, go subsystem so you can isolate the stresses that are germane to, say, the power supply and germane to the polymer systems and germane to the motherboard or whatever circuitry you got. That's part of it. But let's get back to Anton's questions. He had pushback from, you know, we already are working on stuff. I read the subtext of that as going, we don't need more things to work on.
Right. If they've got good field data, they probably don't. They need to fix those.
This sounds like it's not a fielded product yet. It's in design, and they haven't gone to validation yet.
Okay.
And so he's making the argument, let's do it now, because if it shows up later, we have even less time, and it costs us way more to fix it. So let's find out what could go wrong, triage that with all the other things we're working on, and make sure we're working on what's most important to get done, and save time and money in the verification process, which we'll either find it there or the customers will find it. In both cases, it's way more expensive. And I think the pushback is, but we're already finding stuff and fixing them. And I'm like, okay, what if there's 10 more things that are critical that you haven't started yet and you just are unaware of them? And it's a what if. There's two outcomes I can see from Holt. There are three. One is we find a bunch of stuff you really should fix, serious safety issues you need to fix now, and skip all those little fancy stuff that you are fun projects for you to work on, and they don't like hearing that. Two, we find one or two that we already knew about, and that's it. And like, okay, you're already on the right track, but now you know. that there aren't other things out there out to the limits of what we got.
They're finding things. And okay, the question is, when are they finding those things? Are they finding them right at the end of building it and then turn it on and it finds it?
This is in design. It's before design verification. It's early in the program.
Okay.
Earlier in the program. So they're probably dealing with prototypes.
Okay.
You know, functional prototypes.
Right. And you got to be careful with that because, you know, there's a lot of spaghetti on the board. It might be things like that.
Right, so, I think it's, probably.
So there's a time that you don't start halt. You wait for a while until the product's somewhat not mature, but the design is considered mature and the first prototypes have been developed and you've got several, you know, maybe 100
instead
samples.
Of molded parts, you're using, cut parts. You're not using your molding tooling to do it, but you're using, say, an additive process to make the skins on the system. So failure of that material is not as relevant as the failures of your molded components, but you don't have them yet. But you can still go after all the internals of what's going on in your system.
Right, but look at what you're finding already, or what somebody's finding, or what the issues are. If it's a bunch, then, look back and see what those are. Why those are failing, probably in time, if they're not dead on arrival, dead when you design it, and all of them are, then you got, your design doesn't work. You got other problems. But if you got a few that are working and a few that don't, then you've got a differentiation that you can study, and you can use HALT to stimulate that. Also, I stress to stimulate the speed and accelerate that. So if it is a failure in time that you're seeing for your prototypes or whatever that are working at some point zero and then fail over time, if you were to show through accelerated stress testing, either, depending on the mechanism that you're trying, you've identified.
Yeah, you can move
faster. Because you had a failure. So potentially what the stress is. This is how also you can show the value of accelerating it by, say it took a week to find this thing. You were running it on the bench. And then you took it into a chamber, and in an hour, it showed itself. You say, look, guys, I discovered the same weakness at an hour in this chamber, and we have the potential to find many more in the future. But, first of all, any failure you've got already from the prototype line is kind of going to be manifest in high volume production, even if it's a low rate, then it becomes a significant number.
Even
depends on the. So the first thing is he's got to, the value of it when you can't modify or have built test fixtures to kind of do separate the mechanics from if you can, and it's not always possible, like in disk drive, when spinning disk drives, you can't really, take the disk out. You can't even separate the circuit board very far because of signal integrity and signal timings. So for the kind, so you've got to, it's like, again, I focus.
You're showing your age now, Kirk.
Nobody's using spinning disks. Well, I think some of them are still there.
Yeah, they're out there.
Solid-state disks are still more expensive.
Yeah.
But definitely more potential reliability. The point is that there is some possible value after the product's probably been designed, and
if you're
you've
not
got prototypes,
change anything, no test is valuable for you,
right?
But
if you bought 10,000 parts already, you've got all your, supplies, your circuit boards are all cut and printed, whatever. You're going to have a hard time justifying this unless you can make a significant monetary amount. You got to make
business
case.
No, you got to find a business case either way. But I'm thinking of I think the next point is that you need to stop talking to the engineer. He really doesn't want another to-do list to go fix something else that his initial design didn't consider or deal with. And that's part of development. That's why we call it that.
Right.
And then should talk to that program manager saying, do you want to know now or you want to know later? Here's the cost difference of what it takes to fix something later. And if it's a time-to-market product, you could say, how much does it cost to spend a week fixing something we could find out today versus a week before launch. And they go, all right, find it now. They want to reduce the risk of delays.
Right.
They want to reduce the risk of overruns and cost overruns, all this stuff. Talk to the people calling the shots with that business case. The engineer brings up good points. And at some point, it's a gray scale. It's, you know, yeah, we already found everything we need to know. We got a long list of field data and history, and we know what to work on. Well, HALT doesn't have as much of a value in that case. Now, if there's something new or something unique or a new innovation brought into it, focus on that part of it. HALT's really useful.
Right.
Now,
right.
The second question, let's see, now you got me so wrapped around the axle here, Kirk, that I don't even remember it.
I'm glad, Fred.
It was the way beyond operating specs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the only way you're going to get acceleration.
Okay, that is easy. Okay.
You don't accelerate by simulating the end-use environment. That's equal time, you know, unless, I mean, you can do things like,
you got 10 years, go do it, you know?
I mean, you can increase the frequency of something like power cycling or whatever.
Even hinges, you know, some
hinges,
people,
right?
Know,
you open
them,
close
often.
Them, right, yeah. Right.
Or give them to our kids and they'll drop them for you for free.
But also, you know, management's going to say, how do you know that you're going to find this? And there are mechanisms, and maybe this is going to be shocking to you, but there are mechanisms that are very difficult to find in HALT. For instance, battery problems.
Yeah.
Issues.
Because you're very not charging and discharging it.
Discharging and charging it. There's a chemical reaction in there that just takes time, and it takes cycles. And it's really hard to, there's no stress that can really accelerate some of the breakdowns of that.
Crack initiation in materials and its propagation.
Oh, absolutely.
Solder and metals and
right. Invasion. It covers, I see it covering about 80% of the 80 to 90% of the relevant field problems. But there are some things that
just won't catch, and that's good engineering.
Right.
Consider
like
those. But
aluminum electrical caps, you know, we talk about that at the time. Well, it was one stress, it was elevated temperature that could accelerate that. If you did, and I did this because it was a problem back then in computers, that I did thermal cycling on these, not just elevated, but step stress, and it was only a few minutes. So that wasn't long enough for this.
Because it's a chemical process.
But if I did it in an hour,
right,
if I did it for an hour, which I did later, prove that in an hour at 95C, if I suppressed the CPU again, because it would shut down at 65C, if I suppressed that in an hour, I could see these aluminum electrolytics bulge and, in fact, vent. And, so
glasses on.
What?
Hope you had safety glasses.
Fortunately, that's what's why a chamber is really good.
Oh, okay, really handy there.
I'm not standing
over.
Now
you got to wipe all this corrosive stuff off the chamber.
I'm not standing over it like the eggs in Alien, you know, where he watches, he looks into the egg. That's the same. That's what the vents look like when they split open at the top.
Yeah. But anyway, the idea is that the you know, people will push back one way or the other. And these are two of the most common things we hear about. And then one, the business case really helps. It reminds me of years ago, Mike Silverman, when he was running that HALT lab in Santa Clara, he said, you know, we've done hundreds and hundreds of these things. And these are the things we typically find. And when you look at the list, it was 9 out of 10 of them were not long life things. So they weren't, you know, solder joint fatigue. They weren't all the things that you often talk about. Why are we studying that stuff? That's way out there in the distance.
Right. And you know what I say to that?
I know. But he was saying, you know, if you don't mount your electrolytic cans on the board properly, you got this long tail of a lead there.
Right.
And there's any vibration at all, that little piece of metal is going to fatigue and break pretty quickly. And a little bit of vibration in a HALT finds those like that. Right. If you've got vias that are not filled properly, they're going to crack with a few cycles because it's very thin metal. And
get back to the capacitor. It doesn't take much to bring that you know, flush to the board. Sometimes that's all
but
it
that's
is.
That's the point. But it's
the point.
You're not, but you're not the design guy saying, okay, I need a certain value of capacitor at this point on the board.
Yeah.
He's assuming it's perfect. And then we get our prototypes back, or even our first run back from the production line, and we run a halt on it. And like, these things are falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. is not found in any other accelerated life testing or physics of failure modeling or any other stuff. That's a problem with the manufacturing.
No, right? Or component adjacency, where components suddenly touch each other because they're
cause loose. Problems in wear. I had one where a wire from the battery compartment came out of the battery compartment, did a right angle right above the board, mm-hmm. and it was resting right across the, I forget the name of it, the coating. It wasn't a conformal coating. It was just the regular goop they put on top.
Solder mask.
Yeah, that's it. I've drawn a complete blank. And there was the opposite polarity lead trace was right under it. And mm-hmm. so with just, it was like 10 minutes in the chamber with a little bit of vibration, right. dead short, drain right. the batteries back completely. This, you open the chamber and it's the smell of burning phenolics, you know?
Right.
And it's so, like, hey, that's, we would have never found that with engineering and physics of failures and everything else. And, you know, but
no, and you're not going to find
chamber, beautiful.
You're not going to find like proximity problems where a heat sink is, you know, slightly bent one way and
wears through something else. Yeah.
And there's another component right near it that the lead it touches if it's, you know. Yeah. So, yes, those are the, you know, I think they're getting better CAD simulation tools and there's some of this, but I haven't, you know, the physics of failure, multi-physics modules and things like that, I haven't been familiar with. So I don't know how
they're
good
getting
they're
better,
getting.
But it's for those types of failure mechanisms like time domain problems or crack initiation and fatigue
right.
problems or all those stuff. But it's usually assuming the board is made well.
That's exactly it, Fred. That assuming that all the components are manufactured to their specifications,
or
assuming the epoxy on the encapsulant is exactly the right TCE, thermal coefficient expansion, all that's making assumptions that those don't change throughout the product's manufacturing life cycle. And you and I know that that is absolutely not the case.
Oh, we didn't tell you because it was just a small change.
Yeah. we just changed that component to another vendor and, you know, he has the
same
specifications.
Function,
yeah.
Same fit for
he came in the same specifications.
It doesn't work at all.
What do you mean, counterfeit supplier?
Yeah, they're cheaper.
It looked
for
it
a reason.
Had the label on it. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, it's cheaper for a reason.
Yeah.
But anyway, Anton asked a couple of good questions, and when I first responded to him, I was like, yeah, here's a couple of ideas to it. So I'm going to point him to the episode and see where we can go with that. But it's not uncommon to get pushback, and sometimes it takes. You know, our last episode, Kirk, I challenge you with: well, have you ever been in a place where they just get it, you know, and it works great? And he said, "Yeah, but there's still pushback. There's still the new guy comes in, or somebody's like, I'm not sure about this, or it's."
It's a real big challenge, and of course, I want to plug my book and say, look, I wrote a chapter about this particular problem of dealing with management and my
pushback.
Book next generation Halt and Haas robust design of electronic systems is still, and it'll be May. It's 10 years that it's been published.
Well, when's the second edition coming out?
Fred, that first was, and you know, I can't think that I'd add anything to it in those 10 years.
Yeah.
I would add more about the timing and the signal integrity issues that I think
the
thermal
recent paper
stress.
You did out.
Yeah. I would put more emphasis on that with the high speed and the low, you know, we're getting very low voltages,
mm-hmm.
much higher speeds. And now there was even an article about how signal integrity is becoming more of an issue in reliability of data systems and data, large data systems. But I just want to say that is one of the chapters that I, you know, wanted to emphasize how difficult and how long-term the realization of reliability is. You don't realize it unless it's a short term, you know, unless it's that, it's always the front end of the bathtub curve that you, it's going to cost
pay attention
you.
To. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, whether that you get to the wear out, you're probably going to change jobs or do something else, and nobody's going to care because it's mostly consumer products are technologically obsolete before they get to the wear out.
Yeah, got or it VHS. Lasts long enough that, yeah, that was fine. It did what I needed.
Yeah.
The ones I hate, and this is a whole nother episode, is I have an iPad, and it's about 6-7 years old. It's not as old as your phone.
Right.
But it still works. And eventually, Apple's going to say, well, we're not going to support that anymore.
That's right.
And you're on your own. And if it's at some point, the various applications and stuff will get faded out. And I was like, man, it's $1,000.
But it operates.
It's $1,000 equipment. Got life. Yeah. It's doing
got
fine.
Plenty of life.
I can play Sudoku to my heart's content. But
right,
what happened to, you know, checking the weather or a quick check to a website or all that stuff? It should just last for another 30, 40 years.
Well, I don't know if you keep your old phones around. I do.
I don't
necessarily trade them in because, you know, I like them as backup, but they work fine as a Wi-Fi. You know, connecting to the Wi-Fi in the house, I can do all the things I did without the cell service. I just got a new iPhone.
Well, you did. You moved up from 6 to 16 or something like that?
No, to 15, which Apple doesn't make. So I had to go to get a used one. I had to get a, and unfortunately, the battery was 89% of its capacity, of its original capacity.
Well, yeah.
So I did, and I did have to reload the software one time because the camera didn't work. So it makes me question, you know, do I trust this thing in the future? Well, that's kind of why I keep a backup phone.
It's a whole other episode. Our purchasing patterns for electronics, given our backgrounds, that might be interesting.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to this and you're like, what in the world are they talking about? But Anton hopefully got a couple of good pointers here and feedback, and I know I need to add an update to my response to an initial one. But if you've got a question or you'd like to hear us chat about whatever it is related to reliability-ish type stuff, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. A couple of ways to get in touch with us there. Kirk and I and the other hosts of the show are all available through LinkedIn and our about pages on the site. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us. And we, you know, I mentioned this in the last number of episodes that I've got a handful of when we're working through a small stack of comments and questions and suggestions and stuff like that. And so, Kirk, I saved the two on Halt just for you. And so we had a good time with that.
Well,
And next time we'll talk about, you know, parts comp prediction. I know that's your favorite topic. But if anybody got a question for us, you know, just send it on over. I'll add it to the queue and we'll get you an answer back and we'll chat about it and help other people too. Because if you've got the question, probably somebody else does too.
Yeah, and that's what I'd like to say to Anton, right? Is his name?
Yep, Anton.
That wrote it. Said that welcome to the fight, because I guarantee in every organization that you try and introduce these new concepts of testing to limits, you're going to get pushback. You're going to get pushback from somebody somewhere in that organization because they think you're going to bring up irrelevant failures and irrelevant mechanisms that really won't appear in the field. And it's just a constant. That's why, you know, we've got to speak out against and promote it, because nobody else shares any data about real failures in the field. They just rarely do. So,
but that's why we're here. So we'll
that's
help
why
you.
We're here.
We'll help you the best we can.
That's right. Okay, Fred, let's do it again sometime.
All right, we'll soon, Kirk. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.